David Abramson, a very good morning.
Good morning, Howard.
Difficult times.
It is difficult times because I think, you know, there is that mixture between needing to be practical, as you're saying, be brave and say, and not being, I think it's a very big difference between being brave and being foolhardy. And I think certainly taking certain precautions,
right.
You know, taking the advice of authorities. But at the same time, I think it's also very important to keep things in perspective. And I think one of the most important things is around who is actually the most vulnerable to the,
right.
you know, to the virus.
Right, exactly.
And I think for me that is one of the most important things is to get the perspective. And the perspective is that if you get, you know, the coronavirus and you're young, even middle age,
right.
And you are relatively healthy and don't have any preconditions.
And flat feet is not a precondition.
No,
I'm not at greater risk because I've got flat feet.
I don't know. You'll have to ask Dr. Marburg.
Yeah, I will. Oh, he's blocked me at the moment. I think it's too many calls yesterday.
Many.
So
again, you know, I think that's it. Just heed the, heed the advice.
I'll phone from your number, I'm just thinking.
No,
yeah.
then Dr. Marburg will block me.
Yeah, no, it's true. That,
don't make my problems, or your problems, mine.
I said no psychologist ever.
Never. But really, just, you know, as I say, I think for me, we could quite easily get hysterical, and we could quite easily, feel completely overwhelmed by the situation. But always when it comes to anxiety in general, when we talk about dealing with any kind of anxiety, get the facts and make sure that you have the facts. And obviously in this day and age, you know, we have fake news and we have...
Well, that's the other problem. And we don't, you know, you keep saying get perspective. I don't know what perspective is around this. And my concern is we are living in unprecedented times. We haven't had a situation where America has blocked all flights from Europe.
Right.
That where Israel has shut off many flights from around the world and banned gatherings of more than 100 people. This is unprecedented. So you are absolutely right that we have to have, and for me the way to do that is planning. And maybe that's why I'm planning this to death is, excuse that expression, but to saying, all right, what are the contingencies? What if this? What if that? That gives me a sense of control. And maybe for people that are anxious like me, that is a way of dealing with it.
Well, I'd say be very careful because when we hear what happens if, that is the mantra of anxiety.
Yes.
That is the actual.
That's my mantra.
That is the mantra.
Mantra of people that are anxious.
That's
not
right.
Me necessarily,
no.
A friend.
But you have, yes,
yes.
You know someone.
I know someone who that's their mantra. Right.
Well, that friend of yours needs to be very careful because I think, you know, when you're anxious, predictability and consistency really is important.
Right.
So to
exactly.
create a degree.
Absolutely.
And therefore, as you're saying, you know, the bottom line is that this is unprecedented. So the predictability of this is uncertain. It's not predictable. And that does create a degree of anxiety.
And for anxious people, that is the most difficult thing, is not to be able to predict what is going to happen.
So as you say, the mantra comes out, what happens if?
Right.
And if I can control all the possibilities around those happens ifs, then I will feel less anxious. That's the theory. But we've got to be very careful because that list can be very, very long. And that list in itself can be anxiety provoking because if that list starts to become, you know, I've got to do this if this happens, I've got to do this if this happens, it can be a very long list and that becomes anxiety provoking because then you start to see that you can't control the list.
But doesn't it work the other way to say, all right, so, and maybe that's me or maybe I don't have that level of anxiety and I just kind of joke about it, but for me it is helpful to say, okay, I believe that this is what's going to happen. Given all the information that I have, I believe that this is what's going to happen. I do think that in South Africa over the weekend we are going to see a dramatic spike. I think it's going to go exponentially by Monday. We are going to see government starting to come in and saying, okay, these are now going to be the rules. If I can anticipate that and I say, right, this is what happens. If we have to go into quarantine for 14 days, make sure that I've got the following things set up so that I can work. I can do what I need to do. I worry about my listeners. You know, Kathy Caleb, you know, CEO of High, and I have been chatting. How do we keep listeners informed during that time in the event of lockdowns, etc.? So once those are planned, you actually do feel less anxious because I know that our responsibility to our listeners. Mm. Well, we'll deal with it in that way, and we'll deal with something else in another way.
Spot on. But I think what you're describing is healthy anxiety, and people roll their eyes and say, like, oh no, shame, you've got anxiety.
Right.
Anxiety, as I've always said, can be your greatest asset. Mm. It really can. The most successful people that I see have a healthy dollop of anxiety, 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10 anxiety. And that allows them to plan ahead. That creates a sense of urgency for them in their lives to reach goals. And as you're saying, in these kind of situations, plan ahead in a methodical but very level-headed manner. It's when your anxiety goes to an 8, 9, and 10.
Right.
Where it becomes a problem. So you're describing healthy anxiety.
Okay.
Where you're going out and you're thinking, right, let's look at contingency plans. But when you start to think in an 8, 9, and 10, for want of a better description, and I do find numbers to be very descriptive.
I agree with that, yeah.
You know, then things start to become overwhelming. And then trying to predict everything, and that, as I said, that long list of things that you're trying to control, then just stokes your anxiety and makes it even worse.
Right.
So I think for me, again, nothing wrong with some anxiety. It's very, very helpful in life. But just be careful, as we say, that you're not going to 8, 9, and 10. And when you did speak about, you know, getting the facts,
yes,
we talk about anything. Someone is afraid of flying.
You know, right.
Get the facts. And when you actually get the facts, you'll actually see that the chances of you dying in a plane crash are ridiculously small.
No. Mm.
And I think the same...
Same here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to read you this message from Kim Fine, and I think it's such an important message because I think what she's very bravely doing, actually, is describing what so many people are feeling. And she says, all of a sudden, I've gone into complete panic. I woke up this morning and found that my jaws were completely clenched. We were supposed to fly to Israel for Pesach and the beginning of June again and then end of June for my son's graduation. My body has gone into complete anxiety. Please help. And I think that there's a lot of people like this, because now we've got all this planning. You know, we're meant to go here for this and this for that, and we've got our kids, this happening then, and maybe a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah or a graduation or a function, and we don't know anything. We don't know by April, May, June when are things going to be returning to normal, and it just throws us into complete disarray. How do we deal with things like that?
I think exactly as kids feeling, you know, the idea of predictability, you know, and consistency. And I think that's so, you know, one wonderful thing about Judaism, you know, and Yiddishkeit, is that your year is so structured in many ways, and it gives you a sense of predictability and consistency. You know when Pesach is and Yom Tov, and the same thing here. You know, you've got things planned for the year, and it throws you off completely. And then not only, you know, are your plans disrupted, you start to feel, well, when will things get back to what we call normal? And I think what's so important is to try and, in your own way, create a predictability and consistency in your daily life. So have some routine in your life. Yes, it's not, is it going to make things 100% better? No, but create routine in your life.
I love this. Absolutely love this message from Leslie. She says, when I had radioactive treatment, I was in quarantine for 3 days. It was absolutely marvelous. I watched an entire season of Game of Thrones, Zanati.
Oh, yeah.
Zanati would love this. I didn't even get time to read a magazine. That I had bought. I read books. I slept. I had a nice quiet time. I don't think we need to be so overly ready. We have all got friends who can bring us what we need. Just leave it on the doorstep. And I love this absolutely. Voice. So that's from Leslie. It's actually very calming.
You know, funny enough, coming into studio today, I grabbed a cup of coffee and I bumped into an old friend from school.
How old?
Not very old.
Oh, okay.
No, he's my age. That's So middle to young age.
Mm.
And he's going back to Israel. He works in Israel and he often comes through to South Africa, and he laughed and said, oh, going back today, I have to go into quarantine. And I said to him, and we kind of joked to each other, like, enjoy it. You're going to have time to spend with your friends, I mean, with your family.
You're
going to have time to do things that you don't normally have time to do. And yes, we're certainly not trying to ignore, the enormity of the situation. But absolutely, like, you know, as the caller, is saying, let's keep things in perspective, because That's what's going to get us through this. And then, as I say also, so reframing, that's what we really call it, reframing the situation, looking for the positive, and we can. And then the other thing very much so is try and create some predictability in your life, and we can in our smaller way.
And Asayan says, what a great song. Takes me back to King David Lingsfield house parties in Standard 5 way back in 97.
Is that before they allowed the coronavirus guys to come from?
Oh, please, let's not go there. Let's not go. Oh, David, I can't anymore.
Did you get into big trouble for that?
Did I get into big trouble for having a sense of humor? Well, is that like almost a rhetorical question? David, I do tend to get into a lot of trouble.
And that's actually something that's so important, that humor is so important in these situations. And I know it sounds bizarre that we,
But are we allowed to? Are we allowed to be funny in these situations? I thought that's deeply insensitive to everybody else.
Obviously, there's a line in the sand. We need to be very careful about...
There are no lines.
For you, and that's why you get into trouble.
No, because my line is different to your line, is different to Zanati's line. Actually, all three of us don't have great lines, but never mind that. But we're probably not three good examples of this. But the reality is that people do have different lines.
Right.
And I don't quite know how to deal with that, because we do have to be able to laugh at ourselves, and we do have to be able to laugh at a situation where it's appropriate. So some people would say, okay, the fact that it's Purim was great, but it's not appropriate, our Purim spiel, our joke, our April Fool things here, where we spoke about, the group from Wuhan coming to King David Lingsfield for quarantine. But it was so absurd. The notion of it was so absurd that we didn't think there'd be one person in the world who believed us. But yet people did, because maybe we're so anxious that we believe anything. Right. I don't know.
Well, I think with jokes, it's really about psychological distance. How far is this threat away from us? And I think as it gets closer, we're talking about anything really that we joke about. If it gets closer and closer and becomes more real for us as people, we tend to not find it very funny. So I think for me, that's, around coronavirus, I think the jokes that we could have made 2 weeks ago.
Well, I am finding that is quite interesting, is it was a lot funnier a week ago than it is this morning. When we wake up this morning, it's a lot less funny.
Absolutely. And again, we're talking about psychological distance, and we know that humor is a mixture of being funny and
anxious
and pain.
So
because it's becoming so much closer to us, that distance is closing. I think the humor is being lost. I saw some very funny things over the that I'm sure everyone has, but when it starts to become real, when it's happening in our schools, when it's happening in our community, the humor, that psychological distance, is closing. And so the humor needs to be very, very carefully monitored.
Yes, I get that. But at the same time, I feel part of my job in this world is to be able to bring a little bit of perspective, which is to say, you know what, guys, yes, it is serious, but it doesn't mean we can't have a good time. Doesn't mean we can't laugh. It doesn't mean, I often have this discussion, even around religion, is that very often, people that are fairly new to embracing religion, assume that part of being deeply religious means you're not allowed to find things funny and you're not allowed to have a sense of humor. But in fact, that couldn't be further from the truth. Humor is, number one, it's a tool to help us get closer to dealing with situations. And I find in, for example, in my articles, even the ones that people have found offensive, is it's a way, often you can, by making somebody laugh and seeing the absurdity of it, after you've opened that up, then you can actually have a conversation that's quite a real conversation about it, because it's a level of comfort, or not comfort. You kind of get used to that topic, and then you can go into it in a more meaningful way. And it'll be quite sad if we can't do that.
Well, it's so interesting, because when you, in psychology, they've done many studies on comedians and looked into why they become comedians and what they actually, or how they find their material. And it's interesting what you're saying, because comedians often choose topics that they find deeply painful.
Oh, there's no question.
And they put it out there to be laughed at, so that, you know, firstly, so that it can be dealt
with. I deal with a lot of my stuff publicly through humor and in the stuff that I write.
And
there's no question in my mind about myself, at least.
Sure. And I think from a psychological perspective, humor is so, so important in these situations. And, you know, from a psychological perspective, because we do get the situation out there and we're able to look at it from a different perspective. And we also talk about distraction. You know, we're talking about it in a different light, reframing the situation. But I think also very importantly from a physical point of view. And again, you know, science has shown us that laughing is so good for us from a physical point of view.
Right.
It releases endorphins.
Well, I read a study, actually. It was a university in Hong Kong where what they did was they took groups of old people and they divided them into two. And the one group would meet every week for a therapy session. I mean, no disrespect to therapists. They would meet for this group therapy session. And the other group would be taken to a comedy club.
Yes.
And what they found was actually the group that had been taken to a comedy club were feeling less alienated, less anxious, experience less chronic pain,
right?
Versus the group that were in therapy. Now, I'm not knocking therapy. Obviously, it's a vital part of a vital need for so many of us. But humor actually is a way of achieving so much just by having people laugh.
And we don't use it enough. It's so. You know,
well, it's not through lack of trying, David. They shout at me when I do.
Well, you know, when sorry, I was going to say Uncle Howard again, but that's terrible.
Can we stop the creepy Uncle Howard?
Sorry. If Howard's jokes aren't working, then, I mean, again, I personally found Michael McIntyre hilarious. Absolutely. And it's amazing what it can do for your mindset. You know, and today we have so much technology, we can just really, you know, going to YouTube. And that's what I'd actually, another thing that I would encourage people to do over this time. And actually, even after this, virus, goes away and is resolved, is just click onto something funny in the day. And it's actually remarkable how it can change your whole, you know, perspective emotionally. And as we're saying, from a physical point of view, it actually releases all these wonderful endorphins, you know, that make us feel so much better. To have that belly laugh, it's,
yes,
it is.
Kim says you're giving me a lashing in the nicest possible way. Are you? Did you find, in all seriousness, and I'm going to ask you, I'm putting you on the spot.
Sure.
Did you find that our Purim spiel, our joke, never mind the slow lounge thing, I'm not even talking about that.
Right.
So we made a Purim spiel, a joke about, the quarantine at King David, which of course I did deliberately because of the reaction that I saw to the SAJR Purim spiel. Did you find it in bad taste?
Personally,
I'm asking you personally.
Personally, not. Because again, you know, we're talking about psychological distance. And if we have to look at it from a theoretical point of view, coronavirus is not at our doorstep like, you know, yesterday it wasn't in our houses. Didn't feel like it was that much of a threat, certainly to me personally. So I didn't find it offensive. Maybe someone, again, who felt that threat yesterday, felt it was closer to home, would not find it so funny. But again, it all depends on how you're seeing it and your perspective on it. Today, when we hear that someone in our community has it, when we hear that the school's cancelling events,
it becomes a lot more scary. Sure, and the reality is today I wouldn't make that joke.
Yeah.
I wouldn't make that joke today because it is much closer and it is much more real.
And interestingly enough, we could have this debate as well. Many children for Purim dressed up in hazmat suits went as coronavirus.
I don't think they would today.
I don't think they will today. So again, I think it has moved up a level. It is closer to home. So,
But it doesn't mean then we can't adjust.
No.
So we will adjust and then we'll start laughing about certain things as well. And I think we have to keep doing that.
Well, yesterday, even hearing about, it coming closer to home, received a cartoon that, you know, I don't know if anyone's seen it, a dog looking at a human, and the human's wearing the lampshade and saying, it's for your good that you don't touch your mouth.
Right, that's an allergic cough, by the way. I'm just going to keep saying it's allergic.
Make it a wet cough. Is it a wet cough?
It's a wet cough. Okay. It's not a dry cough. I've got allergies. My eyes are itchy. That's what I've got. It's been confirmed by a specialist in the field repeatedly to the point that I've been blocked by him.
I want to ask a nutty.
Yes.
If Howard really had the virus, we'd be theoretically, me and you and Lynn Dewey would be in here for 2 weeks.
Yo, no.
Do you know how much fun that would be?
I can't be in the same space as Howard for 2 weeks.
Yeah, look, I get that. I get that. Nobody can. I can tell you as a nutty, nobody can.
If we were on TV, you should have seen the panic in Zanutty's eyes.
Yeah, like a blind panic.
It's like 3 hours a day is all she can take.
Yeah, I get that. I do get that. But, wow. Can you imagine?
Yeah,
it's
just, imagine you were sensitive, Howard.
Actually, some people would like to spend time in quarantine with me, Zanutty.
Sure, who?
I don't know. Not my family, but I'm saying. In fact, I saw a thing yesterday, which I thought was brilliant, was somebody put on Twitter, idea for a rom-com is a couple, obviously not in our world, but a couple hooks up, one of these Tinder things. They wake up the next morning and they both, they have to go into quarantine together. So a stranger she would go into quarantine with.
What?
Yeah.
Zanutty.
Everybody's a stranger at some point.
Hi, Fem. I love this from Mervin. He says when a teenager gets the virus, he goes into quarantine. David, you also have got a joke. A dad joke.
Well, it's a.
Okay, I hope your kids aren't listening.
No.
Because I'll shout at you.
I know a great joke about coronavirus.
Uh-huh.
But you probably won't get it. See, that's the positive.
Janine, I love Janine. She says, I think the closer you are to the issue, the more important humor should be. Look, Janine, as you know, that is my approach, and I can tell you it's not going to change. So if people are offended by it, then go and listen to one of the humorless radio stations, and there's a lot to choose from in terms of lack of humor. Karen says, I find music changes my day. I often tune in to YouTube, and she says, also, we need some Israeli music. All will be good. Please, can you play some? So definitely music does help as well.
Absolutely.
With our spirits.
This one, like, with all this coronavirus, you know, the people who are making the hand sanitizers are rubbing their hands together.
Absolutely. Oh, God, that is terrible. Did he actually say that?
I'm
embarrassed for your children.
I'm feeling no love from Zanutty this morning.
No. You started it by suggesting a song that she hated. here's another one. An additional symptom of the coronavirus virus is uncontrollable smiling. Europe is lovely at the moment. Everyone is smiling. Thank you. That is Larry from Larry Gilbert. So I don't know. Humor is a big thing, and I think that we need to lighten up a little bit. I also can't stand, David, one of my biggest buttons is fake outrage.
Right.
And the fake outrage, and I really do believe it is fake outrage, over that SAJR article about the slow loungers, people being so deeply offended by it. That was the primary reason, actually, that we came up with the Purim Spiel that continued around the King David theme, because I thought, you know what, wow, you guys need to lighten up, and if you can't lighten up, I'm going to take it one step further for you to help you. And of course, all that did was make people much more completely hysterical and beside themselves. But you know what? We have to actually just get a grip, don't we?
I think it's so important. And I think generally, not only in our community, but people have lost their sense of humor and take things so to heart. We need to be able to laugh at ourselves. We need to be able to say, you know, that is genuinely funny.
It's actually funny. It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay because it's actually, you know, and why? And I suppose from a psychological perspective, why are we so outraged by things that...
This is really a question I've been meaning to ask you is, does outrage over something that, okay, and I'm certainly, it's not my, certainly not for me to decide what is appropriate and not appropriate for people to get outraged. People can and should respond how they want to. But if we see something that looks to be over the top in terms of outrage, isn't it often more of a sign about something else?
Absolutely. It's obviously, you know, when you look at something and as you say, you go, wow, that was, you know, generally funny from, it really should be funny for most people. And one person or, you know, one or two people become, like, it's a nerve. They really become angered, you know, hysterical about the situation. Of course, you know, one needs to think, has this pushed a button? Has this triggered something for them? But then what often happens, Howard, is that, hysteria is infectious. And then we start getting...
And if our friends are hysterical, then we want to be hysterical alongside with them, because that identifies us with them, and we stand with them, not against them. And it becomes about loyalty, and then it becomes about friendships, and then friendships are ruined, and and so it goes.
Why aren't you offended by that? Because clearly you should be. And I think, as I say, hysteria is very infectious. And so we get then what starts as one or two people being completely outraged and completely offended leads to more and more people. It's, you know, becoming
normal day on Twitter.
Yeah, there we go.
A normal day. But it is a normal day on Twitter. It's actually a terrible, it is a terrible thing, because, because outrage has become currency, and we often speak about that.
Zanati, what do you, because I'm not on Twitter. Tell me about that.
No, that's the thing. Like, so, people that you put on high regard on Twitter will tweet something, will be outraged about something, and then it kind of gets awkward when you're not outraged about it as well.
And you want to be.
That's the thing. And a lot of the time, you normally agree on issues on Twitter, but then now it's like, if you keep quiet, it's like, it's going to be a bit awkward. It's going to seem like now I don't support their opinion. I don't support them. And that's how. Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what happens in these circumstances. So, as you said, Howard, we need to be seen to support our friends. And I think we just need to be very mindful of that when we,
It's actually such a strange thing, and I'm using this everywhere at the moment, because I think it fits into so many situations. Is I find that less and less we have moral courage or moral backbone. And sometimes we need to be able to say to our friends, look, you know what, I get that you're upset about it, but it's actually, I don't feel what you feel. And, sometimes we need to be able to stand up to people in our community. We need to stand up to various things that we see, you know, we've all got a perspective, and mine doesn't mean to be right, but it's mine.
Right.
And, you know, as long as I'm saying, as long as I'm being true to myself, you know, we'll keep each other, in a very, very good, in good measure. And I think that is healthy. This is exactly, though, what we need. Karen, you are absolutely right about our music. We do need a little bit of Hebrew music, and I think this one is going to hit the spot. Just to remind you as well, if you are feeling particularly anxious, and it's fully understandable, well, even if it's not understandable, if you are feeling anxious, don't forget the Chai FM helpline, 0800 24 24 36. 0800 24 24 36. Make use of the helpline. If you are feeling anxious, concerned, worried, isolated, anything, just pick up the phone.
And it's so important, Howard, the power of just talking to someone and putting it out there. When we feel alone with our anxiety and our anxious thoughts, it does. For most of us, it becomes overwhelming. But it's so powerful just to talk about it, just to put it out there. And it's amazing how when you put it out there, just like in therapy or when you speak to someone on a helpline, how things actually seem more manageable, and sometimes a lot more manageable. So I would agree, and I would reiterate that and say, you know, don't feel silly. Phone and
just
and
do it.
And just do
just
it.
Just do it. Pick up the phone and do that. David Abramson, thank you as always. I suspect that we will be talking to you more frequently, and I think that one of the subjects that we do need to talk about, and maybe we'll arrange it for in the earlier part of next week, is if a family does have to go into quarantine, how do we deal with our kids with it? How do we keep them occupied, busy, and deal with anxiety and concerns around that? I think these are the unfortunately, these are the conversation that we need to be having.
With pleasure, sure.
All right, it is 9 o'clock. I hope you have a fantastic day. Keep mindful of how we all need to react today, and we'll see you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Don't be late.